The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Welcome to What About Wealth? Making it, investing it, protecting it, leaving a legacy with your hosts, Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. In today's economy, preserving wealth has become more important than ever, especially when it comes to our future generations. Now, here is Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee.
Good morning. Hey, this is Rick Durfee coming in from sunny Arizona.
And this is Rich Bloomfield. Today we're going to discuss business partnerships, and just so we're clear from the outset, I want to talk about what is a business partnership. As its name implies, it might be a partnership, and there are two different kinds of partnerships, or it might be a limited liability company, or what people refer to as an LLC. Now, both of these types of entities are also known as pass-through entities, meaning that they don't pay tax themselves as an organization, but all the tax attributes are passed through to the owners, who are called partners or members, depending on whether it's a partnership or whether it's an LLC. And then the owners pay the tax or take losses on their personal returns. And the business part of this means that each of them must have a business purpose.
Now, Rich, you're getting way ahead of me here, and I'm concerned our listeners may not be as comfortable in this arena as you and I are because we deal with it all day. So let's kind of come from the beginning. What is a partnership? Let's start there. What's a partnership?
Okay, so a partnership is an association of two or more persons or other entities like a corporation. So you could have a corporation and an individual that would have a partnership, and they conduct business as partners, and they do that whether they do it officially or not. You can still end up with a partnership. Now, it's best to do it officially and have a partnership agreement where you spell out what you have agreed to, what the partners have agreed to as far as responsibilities, sharing profits, sharing tax attributes, all of those kinds of things. So generally, that's what a partnership is.
So what makes a partnership, what's the difference between just a regular partnership and a business partnership?
Well, some partnerships can be formed and to do all kinds of things. A business partnership has the goal of earning a profit. And so as long as you've got the goal of earning a profit and it's clear that you're working towards that, then that's you commonly refer to that as a business partnership. And it's important in the kind of planning that we do to have a business partnership or a business purpose in your partnership. Rick, I mentioned earlier that there are two kinds of partnerships, generally. And so let's talk about the difference between a general partnership and a limited partnership.
Awesome. Well, first of all, general partnerships are the default partnership. If you end up with a partnership and you've done nothing else, that's what you have as a general partnership. In that kind of a partnership, all the partners participate in all aspects of the partnership. They help to manage it. They take responsibility for what it does and doesn't do. They can make decisions. They can incur liabilities on behalf of the partnership. And with a general partnership, all the partners are liable for all the acts of the partnership. So if one partner gets sued, for example, for something the partnership did, all the partners are going to be held liable. And there have been cases where even one partner's out using their personal credit card to pay for partnership debts, and the other partners end up being held liable to pay that back. So the acts of any one partner affect all the partners, and so it creates kind of a dicey situation. And it's easy to form a general partnership. You don't have to do anything, and it's key to remember that every partner acts on behalf of the partnership. Every partner is liable for the partnership, and every partner is liable for the acts of all the other people in the partnership.
So that sounds like a bad situation to me. Why would anyone set up a general partnership?
Well, they usually don't do it on purpose. Now, sometimes they do, but usually general partnership happens by accident. You don't have to actually do anything in terms of signing an agreement or filing anything with the state agency. You just, the general partnership arises by virtue of the conduct of the parties. They're acting like a partnership. Therefore, they are partners, especially if they're holding themselves out to the public and saying, "Ah, this is my partner, and we do la-di-da for, as a business together." If there's no structure, you're a general partnership, and it has nothing to do with what you're thinking in your head. It's all a result of what you are in fact doing. So, if you have any concern about limiting your liability or risk, a general partnership is just an extremely dangerous structure that we try to avoid.
So, contrasting that with a limited partnership, the limited part of that name really refers to limiting the liability of one or more of the partners. So, to end up with a limited partnership, there are state and federal filings and other requirements. Generally, there must be a formal agreement. You file that formal agreement with the state, and the requirements for filing and what has to be filed and how much information has to be filed varies from state to state. But it is those kinds of things are required so that everyone knows there's full disclosure. Everyone knows who's in the partnership and knows whether they're a limited partner or whether they're a general partner. Because even in a limited partnership, there is typically a general partner that makes the management decisions, and the limited partners invest typically either money or goods, and their liability is limited to the amount of the investment that they put in. And a creditor or someone who's suing that partnership can't go after them for things beyond what their investment is. So that's a much better structure in order to manage risk, where a general partnership is just wide open and everybody is liable for everything.
So let me get this straight. With a limited partnership, there's still two kinds of partners. There's a general partner and a limited partner. And if I've got it right, by law, the general partner has liability and must, and by law, the limited partner has limited liability but doesn't get to control.
Correct. Now, there is another type of entity which can be classified as a business partnership, and that's the LLC, or the limited liability company. I've heard this referred to often as a limited liability corporation, just because LLC, people don't know what the C means, but it's really a limited liability company. And this form of entity came into existence in the early 80s. Now, the purpose of the LLC was so that you didn't have a general partner that was liable for the actions of the partnership. But this was to allow all the partners, or members as they're called, in a limited liability company to have limited liability. So everyone has limited liability, not just the limited partners. So this is more like a corporation. So it's kind of a hybrid between a corporation and a partnership. You have the limited personal liability of a corporation, but you have the pass-through tax attributes of a partnership. So But I notice, of course, that planners still use limited partnerships, and even though the LLCs have more protection. So, Rick, you're an attorney. Tell us about that. Why do some planners and attorneys still use the limited partnership?
There are some very distinct differences. Partnerships are much older. They have a longer track record. What they do, limited partnership statutes are often different than the LLC statutes and will have different levels of protection for the parties. LLCs can be used improperly. For example, LLCs can have single members, which limited partnerships simply cannot do. Now, the good news is that makes LLCs potentially simpler for tax reporting purposes, but it creates some pretty huge problems for asset protection purposes. So limited partnerships are generally favored for certain functions and often for asset protection functions. And frankly, the better planners are going to use both limited partnerships and LLCs, often in combination with each other, each for their own purpose. So, for example, we might see a limited partnership as a parent entity that owns multiple subsidiaries of limited liability companies, and we might see a limited liability company used for a management company or a control company and have it elect to be taxed as a corporation or something like that. Let's talk about now these limited liability companies are taxed the same way as a limited partnership, but and have some of the limited liability attributes of a limited partnership, but have again the feature that instead of having a general partner where the one partner's in control and the other partners are not, all the parties to a limited liability company have limited liability. And then instead of a general partner, they will have a manager that manages the limited partnership. So let's talk for a minute. I think we'll talk after the break about how we employ these entities in planning, how they're used in business and estate planning structures. And we'll come back after the break in a few minutes to talk about some specific examples. There have been many times when historically limited partnerships have been used as what are called family limited partnerships, and we'll explore how family limited partnerships can be employed with a business purpose to achieve some very powerful asset protection goals as well as estate planning goals.
Comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
How do you feel about the future? Tune in each week for Visionary Leader Extraordinary Life with host Kate Ebner. You can be a great leader by learning from the inspiring stories of amazing visionaries who are shaping our future. Everyone deserves to create their own vision, and Kate and her guests will share the tools that you need to make it happen. Make a weekly visit to the Voice America Business Channel for Visionary Leader Extraordinary Life every Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time. Be inspired. Become inspiring.
Do you need directions to solid financial future? If so, the Money Answer Show with Jordan Goodman will provide you with a roadmap to making smart money decisions in every area of your personal finances. Join Jordan every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 3 p.m. Eastern for the Money Answer Show on the Voice America Business Channel. Learn how and where to get the best deals on mortgages, cars, and insurance. Find out the best ways to save for college and retirement. Get out of debt, improve your credit rating, and save on your taxes. The Money Answer Show with Jordan Goodman will provide you with great tips on investment opportunities in real estate, stocks, annuities, and other investment vehicles. That's the Money Answer Show with Jordan Goodman on the Voice America Business Channel every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
If you are looking for both an inside and insightful look at what you're not seeing in media coverage of today's legal, business, and policy battles, Tune in to In the Court of Public Opinion with host Jim Haggerty. What happens in the public arena affects us all. Whether you're following the latest high-profile court case, corporate crisis, or are just interested in government and policy, be sure to tune in every Tuesday at 12 noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. The witnesses are ready and the jury seated. So join us for our next session in the Court of Public Opinion. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to What About Wealth with Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to info@whataboutwealth.com. That's info@whataboutwealth.com. Now back to Rick and Rich.
Okay, we're back. Rick, are you there?
I'm here. We're back.
Great. So, right before break, you were talking about limited partnerships, how we actually use these entities in business and planning structures. So, I was going to tell a quick story just to illustrate a very common practice of how these so-called family limited liability partnerships were used. About 30 years ago, I had my first introduction to this structure. My wife's parents had actually formed one, and they funded it with some assets. And So in doing that, they became basically, even though it was a limited partnership, they were the general partner, they were also the limited partners, and they owned all the interests in the partnership because they're the ones that contributed all the assets. Over time, the idea was to give their limited partnership interests to their children. So they did this by using annual gifts, or by using up their lifetime exclusion, which we've talked about earlier on this program. So this was done over 20 plus years so that eventually the value of the partnership was transferred to the next generation. And while my wife's parents retained a small general partnership interest, the majority of the value was passed on to the children via the limited partnership interest. So upon their death, the retained value that they had was very small, and there it didn't affect their estate. They didn't have to pay estate tax, and the assets passed on to the next generation. Now, I'm sure many of you out there have seen this or heard about this, maybe experienced it in your family. Rick, I haven't seen this done a lot by knowledgeable planners in the past few years, maybe even, 10 or 15 years. So why is that? Is that because there's a problem with the limited partnership? Or what are the problems with trying to pass assets using that type of a structure?
Well, the limited partnership is still a viable business entity, but it's not used for a number of interesting reasons. There have been some court cases that have mitigated some abuses with limited partnerships, and the politicians have frankly attacked the use of limited partnerships a little bit. But some other reasons are kind of interesting why limited partnerships don't get used. There's in the last 20 years, with computers coming along, we've seen a whole lot of planners out there who call themselves estate planners. And what they do, the only thing they do, in fact, is prepare trusts and wills and things like that, which are actually good documents. We like those documents, and they're powerful documents. But that's all these estate planners do. So when your only tool is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. We end up with people who have estate plans, in quotes, and all they have is a series of trusts. They don't have any of the other business entities. So the limited partnership, doing that requires a higher or more sophisticated level of knowledge and expertise. You have to be knowledgeable about business issues and partnership and the related tax issues. And then we often see also some of these quote-unquote family limited partnerships that are just structured in a way that's dumb, that creates problems. let me kind of illustrate this. Often the family limited partnership will have family members as the partners. The children and the grandchildren will all be the partners. And there are some issues that come up with that. People, natural people, they die, they get sick, they're either too old because they're young, not adults yet, or they're too old and they can't make decisions. And they have problems in life. They get sued, they get divorced, they become incapacitated through accidents. And all of those things can create issues for the limited partnership. So, as an example, even when a partner in a limited partnership is in a lawsuit or a divorce, it creates problems. And so the members of the partnership, the partners are constantly having to go to their spouse and say, hey, honey, I love you, but sign this piece of paper saying you don't have any part of my partnership. It can also result in some pretty nasty problems. I encountered a situation some years ago with a family that had done as you described. They owned several sections of land in a place that later became the center of a city. And so this, what was once farmland, cotton fields, had become extremely valuable, worth many, many tens of millions of dollars. And this family had been, as you described, using the limited partnership to make gifts over a period of many decades. Well, they had children that were old, that had adult children, and that had grandchildren, and then they had children that were still young, still at the very beginning of the family. And when they went to sell the farm, the oldest child, for example, who had, it was a big family out here, they had 8 or 9 children. Every one of their 8 or 9 children ended up with more than $1 million from the sale of this farm. Whereas the youngest member of the family, who had 3 or 4 children who were just barely starting and had only received one gift, ended up with $10,000 or $20,000. So there was huge disparities in the family, and that created a small family fight over, gee, it's not fair that you guys are getting millions and millions of dollars and we got lunch money, barely able to do anything with it. And then, of course, there are people who just abuse the limited partnership, set it up improperly or don't follow the rules, and which is a big source of most of the lawsuits that have come from the IRS in challenging limited partnerships, is people who do it wrong, and they did it wrong, and they got caught, and they should have been caught, and they should have been stopped, and somebody should have told them not to do what they were doing in the first place. So what those lawsuits do is tell us what not to step on, but the bottom line is, limited partnerships are still very viable. They're still very powerful for both business and for planning an estate, for succession planning. And they can be used to get property out of the taxable estate and protect assets. Now, an issue that we encounter also is when individuals are the partners, we end up with each generation has to start over again. So in the example of the family who successfully gifted millions and millions of dollars to the next generation, well, now the next generation has a problem and they have to do the same thing all over again. So the permanent solution, which is something we talked in a prior program, is dynasty planning using dynasty trusts, where once we get it out of the taxable estate of one generation, we get it out of the taxable estates of multiple generations. So we're able to carry on this family asset for a long, long time without having to spend huge amounts of money redoing each generation what was done once. So,
Rick, let me jump in here. One thing before we stop on this limited partnership, I've noticed that the L's on the limited partnership continue to grow. There's LPs, then there's LLPs, then there's LLLPs. And maybe there's even 4 L's and a P now. What does all that mean?
Well, part of that is a result of the great experiment of democracy. We have 50 states and 50 different statutes, although there's a lot of similarities. And each state has been kind of doing their own thing. In the 80s, when LLCs started to come out, a number of states decided, well, instead of creating a whole new LLC statute, let's just weld something on to our limited partnership statute and let's have a limited liability limited partnership. And that, so we get limited liability limited liability partnership, and there are. I have seen 4Ls. So the more L's are more limits and more liabilities popping in there. In many states, you can form a limited partnership with a general partner, and then there will be some extra filing or some certification process to go through to cause that limited partnership so that the general partner has limited liability. Now, that is very different from state to state, and often there's huge crossover there between the LP and the LLC and the LLP and the LLLP. So it requires knowledge about what jurisdiction you're in, what the laws of the particular state you're trying to work in require. And it also creates an opportunity, though. That's a planning opportunity, Rich, you and I have used many times often, because we have a multi-state practice and we look at what's going on all across the U.S. in this area. We can be selective and we can kind of jurisdiction shop, pick a place to form a business entity that gives us the particular treatment that we want. There are, for example, some jurisdictions that have way better asset protection for limited liability companies, so we tend to favor those jurisdictions when we're going there to form an LLC. Other jurisdictions will have better privacy protection, so certain LLCs will go to one place for privacy, will go to another place for asset protection, and then for convenience, we'll set things up in the state wherever the individual happens to be doing businesses. And then, of course, there are some states which punish you. If you do business, they presume you must be gouging somebody and making inappropriate profits. So there are a number of states that that punish you. If you form an LLC, there are minimum taxes that you must pay, and some of them are pretty substantial every year. So with a multi-state planning practice, we can kind of shop and pick the number of L's that we want, pick what's most important, convenience or asset protection or privacy, and kind of manage those issues as we select where and how to form which entity.
Great. When we're going to go to break again here, and when we come back, we're going to talk about some additional aspects of using these business partnerships and planning. There are a lot of things that are important to discuss about how these things work, discounting, valuation, control, all those kind of things that make this area interesting, and that Congress and court cases have affected, so that we have to be aware of those things, how to use them, and in using them effectively, we can pass assets in a very effective way. So we'll discuss that when we come back from break.
America Business Network.
How can we Americans realize our dreams to earn a living? How can you pursue your dream and make money as an owner or an employee? Learn how at The American Business Person, the online weekly radio talk show hosted by Rich Killian. Today's business leaders share how to succeed and what fails. If you own a new or established business or ever hope to, you must tune in. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Central, and noon Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel, or listen on demand to our archived shows.
Are you looking for innovative ideas on how to achieve your financial dreams? Tune in to Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday afternoon at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Join certified financial planners Ken Smith and Ethan Broga to learn how you can obtain financial success. You'll be entertained while you discover techniques to alleviate your financial concerns. Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel.
Are you feeling slammed and suckered in today's stock market? If so, then you need to tune in to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, Jordan Kimmel will train you in what you can do to beat up the big boys on Wall Street, as well as share his secrets to success so that you can buy and sell like a profit-pumping pro. Grab the bull market by the horns and listen to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You are tuned in to What About Wealth with Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to info@whataboutwealth.com. That's info@whataboutwealth.com. Now back to Rick and Rich.
Hi, this is Rick Durfee, and we're back from break talking about business partnerships.
This is Rich Bloomfield. Let's talk a little more in depth about the important aspects of these business partnerships. I know there's a lot of things to think about, worry about, keep in mind when we're structuring these things. So why don't you launch into a couple of those? Let's talk about why those are important.
Well, remember that one of the main reasons that limited partnerships were invented in the first place was to limit liability, which is an asset protection purpose. It's a function. So we have to ask why and how does a limited partnership protect assets. And one of the features of a partnership that allows it to protect assets is the fact that you have partners. And with a partnership, partners enter into an agreement, and they do it on purpose, and they say, this is our deal together. And one of the things that partners can agree upon is whether to admit or exclude new partners. So they can say, hey, we're going to let as many new people come into our partnership as want to, or they can say, no, this is our deal right here. These are our partners, and we're not going to allow any more. That's a legal doctrine called mutuality of contract. So if, Rich, you and I are partners, if we were partners and you got sued and the plaintiff had a judgment against you and came to you and said, I'm gonna garnish your assets, I'm gonna take your stuff away from you in satisfaction of my judgment, and I want your interest in that partnership. Well, if the plaintiff was able to do that and take your partnership interest away from you, that would make me partners with that plaintiff. And I have the right to say, no, I will not be partners with that person. I have no deal with that person, and that person sued my good friend Rich. So I have the power and the right to exclude that person as a partner. The effect of that is a properly structured partnership, and this is true of both a limited partnership and only a properly structured LLC, because LLCs can be improperly structured for this purpose, but a properly structured limited partnership can exclude third parties who have sued a partner. So the third party's remedy then is limited to something called a charging lien or a charging order, which permits them to stand in the shoes of the partner to receive whatever income comes out of the partnership. Now, income is kind of a tricky word, and you can elaborate on this for tax purposes, but we tend to think that income means that I made money, and it does mean that in a sense, but really income is a technical term that means tax liability. If you had income, you owe a tax. You can have cash flow and not have income. You can have income and have no cash flow. And in this case, the income from the partnership passes out to the partners, and they pay the taxes on their personal return. Well, if a plaintiff has this charging order or charging lien, they stand in the partner's shoes to receive their income. So any losses or income that the partnership has are going to flow out to that partner. Well, we can create phantom income, distribute the income to that partner without distributing any cash, and they have to pay the taxes on the income, but they didn't get any revenue or any cash flow to pay the taxes. So that becomes a poison pill and makes the limited partnership very unattractive for plaintiffs to come and gather and take. And I have been through cases with clients in litigation in very ugly situations where they even, in fact, offered this remedy to the plaintiffs. Hey, do you want the charging lien? You can have it. And I've never once ever seen, in any cases that I've worked on, I've heard of them, but I've never seen, actually, a case where the plaintiff came back and said, yeah, give me that charging lien. I'll take that phantom income and pay taxes on it, even though I never got any cash flow. So this partnership arrangement allows us to fractionalize the ownership. You can have lots of people own a part of it or through the trusts and business entities, and we can protect that those assets and property so that the bad guys can't come in and take it. So as you've worked from a tax perspective and working with clients dealing with some of these other issues, discounting and other things, Rich, talk to us about what are some of the other important things that you've experienced in working with partnerships.
Okay, I'm going to jump back here for just a second because as you're talking about these charging liens or charging orders, I know that different states deal with those in different ways. So that's one of the times that we're very particular about which states we like to set up these partnerships in so that we do have maximum asset protection, because it's completely clear in the statute in some states that what you described as being able to withhold distributions, even though you're passing out income, that's completely clear in the statute in many states, and in other states, in most other states, it's not. So I just wanted to point out that it does make a difference, and planners need to be aware of that, and you need to be aware of that as an individual. Where am I going to get protection? And it's really best if you know which states to set that up in.
Right.
Now, moving on.
I want to build on that, though. That's a moving target, and I'm deliberately not saying states on the program because states keep changing. And I've even seen states that were good states once become not so good states over time. And a planner has to be up on that, following what's going on, and know, again, where it's good to do what.
Great. Thanks for that clarification. One of the other things that we really focus on with these business partnerships are valuation issues. In other words, the reason it's important is because when you put assets into a structure like this, into a structure where it's fractionalized and where there are different interests, for example, either a limited interest in a limited partnership or a non-voting interest in an LLC, those interests are worth less than an interest where you have voting rights or where you're the general partner and can control. So over time, there's been, in working through court cases, and there's been precedent set on how to move assets at a lower value by using these discounting techniques. So, for example, if you put a large parcel of property into a limited partnership, and then you wanted to move the limited interests in that partnership to a dynasty trust, like we have discussed on our program before, so that it's moving it out of the estate. Well, because those limited interests have lack of control, you can't sell them because, as you mentioned earlier, there's mutuality of contract. You can't just sell them to somebody, and there's an ability to compel distributions. Those kinds of things cause those interests to be worth less than an interest where you could do all of those things. So that allows us to have a valuation done. They evaluate all those things, and we're able to move assets that are worth a significant amount at a much lower price. In other words, using up less of your lifetime exclusion or less of your annual gift exclusions by making the value of those of the assets less. So that's how those things work. And those are that valuation discounting thing tends to be under attack by Congress pretty often, it seems. And I think it's because in times like today, for example, they see that things that were worth a lot now are not worth as much. And by using discounting, you can make them worth even less. And that allows us to move things away from transfer taxation, the transfer taxes, in a way that they didn't anticipate, so it impacts revenue. So we see that those things are coming under scrutiny and attack. Now, there are a couple of other things, Rick, that we ought to talk about before break regarding this. So I'm going to throw it back to you to talk about a couple of other things in regard to limited partnerships.
Well, one important point to kind of build on what you just said, in these valuation issues, those values are all market-driven. And what we're looking at is what would somebody pay for this? And what would they pay for an asset where you can't control it, you can't sell it, you can't turn it into cash, and you have unpleasant tax consequences? And the answer is, in a marketplace, you wouldn't pay very much. So taxpayers, I think, wisely have been using the market to drive the value down and then to use all these gift exclusions that we talked about to make gifts. And obviously the IRS doesn't like that because that reduces revenue, and they have challenged it. A lot of the lawsuits have been brought by the IRS have been conspicuously for the purpose of enhancing revenue and disagreeing with, you put an asset in that was worth X and then you said it's X minus whatever discount, they want to tax the full value, not the discounted value. And then the congressional attacks have all come because of a fundamental distrust by some politicians in the marketplace. They don't want the market to be able to identify what the value is. They want some government agency or some bureaucrat somewhere to say, no, we're not going to go with a market value. We're going to go with we'll let you know what the value is, and we'll tell you what we want it to be. And the value that they tell you will be based upon what they want to raise in terms of tax revenue. So in spite of all that, so far, even if just for business purposes, the limited partnership is still very viable. It still has strong uses both for asset protection and for estate planning. And what we have to be careful of is following the rules, and one of the things we can talk about when we get back from the break here is structuring assets through planning so that they're outside of the taxable estate, unavailable to creditors, and there's some very powerful things we can touch upon when we get back from break.
Business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Do you want to know what's really going on these days? Well, Capital Thinking takes you inside the worlds of policy, politics, law, and business. What happens in Washington, on Wall Street, and in our nation's legal system impacts your business every day. We're taking you on a behind-the-scenes tour of all of it. Each week, we bring you unfiltered conversation with a variety of influential policymakers, lawyers, and business leaders. I'm Kevin O'Neill, and I'm your host as Capital Thinking tours the halls of power. Join me for Capital Thinking on the Voice America Business Network each Thursday at noon Eastern and 9 a.m. Pacific Time.
Leadership is a vital skill set in today's competitive global economy. Being a leader is not enough. To succeed, you must optimize your performance and know how to imbue others in your organization with leadership skills. Practical, actionable leadership insights are the focus of Leadership Development News, hosted each Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, by Kathy Greenberg and Relly Nadler on the Voice America Business Channel. Doctors Greenberg and Nadler, who coach global leaders on how to be most effective, will share their insights and contacts. The path to leadership excellence begins here. Tune in every week for the Ellis Martin Report. Our program will bring you the news and information that you need each week. We look at publicly traded small and mid-cap companies from a variety of sectors. We'll talk to key people in the industry to bring you the foreground and background of new and up-and-comers for potential investment. Please remember, invest only at your own risk. The Ellis Martin Report is meant for information purposes only. Tune in every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Voice America Business. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to What About Wealth with Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to info@whataboutwealth.com. That's info@whataboutwealth.com. Now back to Rick and Rich.
Hello, everyone. We're back, and this is Rich Bloomfield. I'm going to turn the microphone over to Rick here for a minute. We're going to tell a story about some successes so that you can see how the things we've been talking about apply and how they might apply to your situation. So, Rick, let's jump right into that, and then we'll summarize as we get close to the end of the program.
Well, all the successes that happen with the use of limited partnerships in planning are built on the foundation of a strong business purpose. There is always a business purpose, and that can be to consolidate control. It can be succession of the business or the assets. It can be to limit liability, that kind of risk management or the tax efficiency. It can be the economies of scale, a group of individuals or family members or otherwise being able to come together and do more together than they can do separately. And then, of course, to manage the distribution. So we use these limited partnerships and business partnerships in planning for all these business purposes. And some examples, you've mentioned already the ability to make gifts, and to the extent that we're allowed to take discounts on the value of those gifts to move us assets out of the taxable estate. But another kind of very powerful tool is to structure new deals in a way that they're not going to be taxed. We achieve a tax threshold as we build our net worth over time. We get to the point eventually where every penny that we earn or accumulate in additional value, we're going to pay income taxes on it while we're alive, and when we're dead, the government's going to come confiscate roughly half of it. And that tax, that estate tax, is a voluntary tax. The only people who pay it are the ones who don't plan well and plan in advance. The other thing is we can create all that value, and I've seen this many times, tragically, if we haven't structured it properly, that value can be taken away from us by the plaintiff. And if you don't think we live in a litigious society where people are opportunistically just looking for a chance to sue you, think again. Everywhere people are looking for opportunities to sue. So, I have multiple clients that have done this, but we've seen families that have been able to take properties and business interests, structure them in a partnership, utilize the gifting to transfer that to a dynasty trust where it's not going to be taxed when there's death, where in the event of lawsuits, they're protected. I've had clients with this structure have nuclear holocaust level of litigation with multiple parties, multiple ugly, horrible things happening. And often, sometimes even bankruptcy or multiple bankruptcies of entities. And I've had them be able to come out at the end of the day, and that's never a pleasant experience. It's like a surviving cancer. Well, on the one hand, we're grateful we survive. On the other hand, the cancer was still ugly. We can survive the litigation. It doesn't make it any less ugly, but we can come out on the other side of it with property and assets intact. I've also seen very large estates moved to the next generation in a dynasty structure so that they're not going to get messed up with the money. We're able to integrate the values and the planning into it so that the family doesn't just go have a wild spending party, and the limited partnerships, business partnerships, and LLCs are an integral part of that. I have a very specific case I kind of want to mention where this is kind of a tangential issue of, and I've actually had this happen probably a dozen times, where a family has gone through this planning process, structured their businesses and their properties in business entities and these dynasty trusts, and then one day there's trouble in paradise and a marriage is going to end. And I've had this happen on different generations. It could be the grandchildren or a child or even mom and dad, and the patriarch and matriarch of the family suddenly have a stupidity spasm and their marriage is in trouble and they're going to end. And well, one of the consequences of this planning is whatever's been put into the partnerships and gifted to the children and the grandchildren don't belong to mom and dad anymore. So they're not marital assets. They cannot be divided up. I've seen a couple of scenarios. I've seen mom and dad suddenly get humble. Oh, wait, I can't take my millions of dollars and run off and find a blonde and buy a red convertible and live the wild life. My money's tied up and I'm not going to get it to just blow it and spend. I've seen them humble themselves and come back and save the marriage. But also, the family wealth is not attacked and destroyed by divorce. If we look at what are the events in life likely to destroy our wealth, divorce is up there in the top two or three. It destroys wealth consistently. And then on the subsequent generations, when you have a child or a grandchild, I always ask my clients, what's the probability that one of your descendants is going to experience an unpleasant divorce? And the probability of that is high. So through the use of these business limited partnerships and LLCs and the dynasty planning, when that ugly, uncomfortable event occurs in life, the assets of the child going through this unhappy experience are protected. It's kind of like if you have to go through a divorce, which is an unpleasant experience, would you like to come out with your property intact on the other side of it, or would you like to lose your property? And I think keeping it together is always better. So, Rich, as we're wrapping up here, let's talk about what we want to invite our listeners to do. I think that there are some very specific things that anyone listening to this program ought to be aware of and kind of how can they take this and apply this in real life?
Yeah, I think that's very important, Rick. The first one that I think comes to mind is if you have family partnerships, so-called family partnerships or LLCs, a review would be in order on all of those. For example, are they really a business partnership? Do they have a business purpose? Often we find partnerships or LLCs where there really isn't one. There hasn't been one written down or communicated. We also want to be sure that are they formed properly? Is there an operating agreement for the LLC? Is there a partnership agreement for the partnership? And does it clearly indicate how things are to be dealt with? Those things are extremely important. And for example, in the LLC world, if you form an LLC and it's a single member LLC, we've seen court precedent recently indicating that the courts are going to ignore the LLC. In other words, it's like it isn't there, and so all the trouble you went to set it up was for naught. The assets won't be protected. So extremely important to make sure that things are in order. And having those reviewed would be well worthwhile. Also, if you're in the middle of a family limited partnership where you're trying to move assets by gifting the limited partnership interest to individuals, maybe that should be looked at. Setting up a dynasty trust instead to gift those two would make a lot more sense, because then you come up with a permanent solution instead of a temporary solution. We want to make sure that these entities are integrated properly into the trusts, and if you have significant assets inside of a partnership or an LLC and you don't have trusts, then we ought to talk, because trusts need to be set up. The trusts need to become partners in those partnerships, and in such a way, integrated in such a way that we can pass wealth to the next generation without incurring the transfer taxes. So those are, I think, the important takeaways from the program today. And as always, we invite you to email us at info@whataboutwealth.com or call us, and we can discuss these in more detail where that's needed.
And if you're thinking about a partnership but have been afraid because you didn't know if they were going to shut it off, come talk to somebody who knows how to make it happen.
We'll see you next week.
Listening to What About Wealth with hosts Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. Please join us again for another edition next Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Until then, have a profitable week.